The Variety Artist, episode 33. When you're trying to figure out how to travel the world performing, there is a couple of schools of thought. The first is to create a unique routine, practice it a million times, and polish it to perfection. And maybe, just maybe, you'll be able to take it around the world. The second is to do everything. And that's exactly what my guest today does, everything. You'll hear how he's taken what he's learned and traveled around the world. Pretty darn cool. Oh, and by the way, if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on your phone or mobile device. It really helps me a lot.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
My guest today is a multi-talented variety performer, world-class magician, award-winning balloon artist, and has performed internationally for over 20 years. His corporate client list reads like Fortune 500. From cruise ships to Atlantic City casinos, he's done it all. Variety artist, I give you Billy Damon.
Yay! Hi, everybody.
There you are!
Yes, I am.
How's it going, Billy?
Going great. I'm actually really, really happy about doing this.
Me too. I'm excited to have you on. Mm-hmm. Now, Billy, tell me about your personal life a little bit. Before we get into all the different things that you do, what is kind of a day in the life of Billy Damon look like?
Well, I try to make it a day in the life is working as much as I possibly can. So my wife, Trish, my two kids, Liam and Haley, are here. Haley is 23. She's also a performer. She does face painting and balloons. Oh. Liam is sometimes a performer. He does a lot of stilt walking for me at different events, as well as the walking globes, some juggling, a little bit of unicycling. He's actually a culinary chef.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. So he does that for his full thing, and he does performing. He's not as much into the performing as Haley is. And Trish, my wife, also does performing. She does face painting and helps me on gigs and part of my shows.
So you have a whole family of performers there.
Well, it's contagious.
Do you guys do stuff together?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, just last weekend I did an illusion show with my daughter. Broke out some of the old illusions that I had in storage, finally got to use them. Yay! Did a whole Halloween show, and she came to life out of one of the sword boxes, and produced a dog, and all. We had a lot of fun. And my wife was there. She took care of the sound and setting up. And so
that sounds like fun. When my daughter was 16, although she's not a performer, she's a singer, and she does visual art. But she did a subtrunk with me when she was 16. Mm-hmm. We did it twice. That's it.
Haley's first show, I think she was 6.
Oh.
She was doing her first show, and she produced her brother out of a tip-over trunk. So I have a boy and a girl. All I need is one more to have one of each.
There you go. Wait a minute. So you're originally from New York, and then you moved to Florida. Is that right?
Actually, yeah. Originally from a little town called Brooklyn. One traffic light. Every corner. I had a 15-year run in Atlantic City performing there before I came down to Florida, mostly because my parents lived in Florida and my kids need to know their grandparents, so it was the right thing to do.
And are you near your parents?
Actually, I moved them from Melbourne, Florida, to about maybe 10 minutes from here. So rather than put them in assisted living or anything else like that, they're not at that point yet. But they're close enough where I can take them to the doctors and take care of them and clean up the house and fix the house and stuff like that. So it works out really well. And my kids get to experience their grandparents.
That's important.
It's all about family.
Now, I was looking on your Facebook earlier. Last night or today. Mm-hmm. And one of the posts that you had, you were teaching juggling to the kids at an airport.
Yes. It's actually really cool. I just signed a contract with the Orlando Airport, International Airport. What we do is once a week, we supply them on Fridays some type of entertainment. Most of the other performers are there. They only do one thing, so they get to do one day per month. I have a whole bunch of different things that I do, so I'm able to do 4 days per month. So one day, my wife Trish will be doing glitter tattoos. Another day, I'll be doing some strolling magic. Another day, Haley would be doing some face painting. And then another day, I have this interactive juggling fun spot, I call it. I bring all kinds of spinning plates and juggling club, the world's smallest production bicycle, and all kinds of stuff. And I teach it to the kids. I mean, because lots of times the kids are sitting there in the airport, they'll be sitting there for like 3-4 hours waiting for their flight. So this gives them something, a little something to do, gives the parents a little bit of a break. Everyone has a good time.
What a great way to spend some time. I mean, they're there anyway. They might as well take advantage of the time and get good at something.
Yeah, it's true. It opens them and gives them an opportunity to try something new. The parents, of course, love it and taking pictures all over the place about these, what the kids are doing, something that they've never done before. If I can make the spark for future performers, why not?
Why not? You're teaching juggling, and what else do you do?
Whatever somebody asks me if I can do it, yes, I can. I do fire eating, unicycling, mime, balloon art, of course, strolling magic, juggling, stilt walking, costume characters as well. I have a huge, huge closet. People come over to my house just so that they can see my closet.
And you traveled all over the world doing all these different things, right?
Mm-hmm. I get people all the time going, well, we live about 3 hours from here. Would you be willing to travel that far? I said, I've been to China. 3 hours is easy.
So what did you do in China?
It was actually for a huge festival that they were doing called AEMI. It was fabulous. I had the greatest time. The Chinese people are just awesome. Not to mention that I'm blonde hair, blue-eyed. So when I walk down the street, I get all these little Chinese kids going, "Ha-da-da-da-da-da." I know I'm not from around here. It's true.
I had the same experience when I went to Greece. Greece is the same thing because everybody's dark-haired, and I'm blonde and blue-eyed.
Yeah, so we blend right into the crowd.
Everybody's pointing at me. I'm like, why are they all pointing at me? And you've been to Canada too?
Oh, yeah. I did stuff in Montreal, the Queen Elizabeth Hotel, for a charity event that I did there. I did some other stuff in Laval, Canada. I did stuff in Toronto. I love going up there. Again, really good people and cool food.
So do you have any good stories about China or Canada?
Yeah, actually, there's one story when we were in China doing these shows, and there was maybe 5 or 6 different stages happening all at once, and it was really, really hot. I think it was also they had a typhoon that came through as well. So it was rainy, it was hot, it was humid, but we had all these different stages going, and by one of the stages, they had this little food booth. They cook a thing called stinky tofu. I kid you not. It's called Stinky Tofu, and it lives up to its name. They actually had to change some of the performers from one stage to another because they were gagging so much on the stage from the smell of it. It was amazing. But in China, it's a delicacy.
Did you have some?
I tried a little bit. Thankfully, it didn't taste as bad as it smelled, but I only tried a little bit, and just enough so I can say, yeah, okay, I did it.
Yeah, and did you have stinky breath after that? Stinky tofu, stinky breath?
No, I had stinky toes after that. The other thing that I saw was there was a guy that had a tricycle, and on the back of the tricycle was a little hibachi. And he pulled up to a corner, and he opens up his little hibachi, and he starts cooking stuff and everything, and he's got these little baby octopus. And he puts the little baby octopus onto a skewer, and he's with the arm sticking out and everything else, and he starts cooking them up, and the kids are eating them like we eat hot dogs. These kids are eating these octopus on a stick.
Oh, wow.
I guess it must taste good. Everything tastes better on a stick.
On a steak.
On a steak. I actually made Jeff Dunham the jalapeno on a stick for him out of balloons.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I was at a place where he was doing his concert not too far from there. And I was able to, I ran into him. I said, oh, I got something for you. And I made his little jalapeno, I forget the name of it, the jalapeno on a steak for him. He got the biggest kick out of that.
All right. So I've heard Chicago, China, Canada. Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to stump you. I'm going to give you a country and tell me if you perform there. How about Mexico?
Yes. Acapulco at the Acapulco Princess.
What did you do there?
I was actually doing my magic show there. The Acapulco Princess is really cool as long as you stay inside their grounds. Don't leave their property. Well, they tell you that, but you could tell by the minute you walk outside, too. You go, okay, I don't need to be out here.
How about the Virgin Islands? You been there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did it. St. Thomas, Martinique. I was actually on one of the cruise ships, and what we would do on some of the cruise ships, we would go in early, set up, and do a little bit of a show at the local school. Just as a goodwill thing for the Cunard Line, the Queen Elizabeth II.
How's that cruise ship life?
It's very, very, very hectic. I actually loved it. It was a lot of fun. I did 2 cruises for the QE2, a couple of other cruise ships here and there. But those were one of my favorites because the ship was just amazing. And it was also my first ship.
What kind of family stuff do they do on cruise ships?
Well, for the most part, the cruise ships really didn't have that much, or at the time anyway, they didn't have very much stuff that they did for the kids or for the family. So I would do like a little clown show and I'd do some balloons and stuff like that. And I would do a little workshop where I taught the kids how to make some stuff out of balloons too. And that went over really, really well. So I had like three different things that I would do for them during the week or 2 weeks that I was there. And the rest of the time in between, I just get to play and meet the guests and go to the islands. It was cool.
Now, have you been to Hawaii? It's not a country, but...
No. Actually, I spent a month in Hawaii, in Oahu, working for the American Heart Association. We went to a place called Waimea Falls. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they weren't stopping people from cliff jumping into the falls. I did like a 50-foot cliff jump into the falls. It was awesome. Crystal clean water. It was just beautiful. Really, really. It's like postcard worthy.
Was that scary?
Oh yeah, I would never do that again. It probably took me about 15 minutes just to make that first step to do the jump. The thing, you go to the end, all right, I'm going to do this. You look down, you're like, no, I'm not going to do this. All right, I'm going to do this. No, I'm not going to do this. All right, finally, I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. It was cool.
Is that one of those things where you're in the middle of falling, you're in the middle of the air, and you're like, why did I just do this?
No, you're in the middle of falling. You're going down. You go, oh, cheese. I have to remember to pick up cheese from the grocery. That's it.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that's what you're thinking on the way down. Well, let's talk about Atlantic City. You were the resident magician for the Tropicana there?
Oh, the cool thing with when I was over at the Tropicana, I was there. Yeah. Harry Blackstone Jr. was doing his show there. At the time, the Tropicana had the largest showroom in all of Atlantic City. While he was there, I talked to the entertainment director, who was my boss, said I'd really like to set up a little meeting between Blackstone Jr. and all the performers just to talk to him and learn from him. And he's like, well, you know, he's really, really busy. I understand. If you would just ask him, if he says no, that's cool. But if we just ask him, at least we can say we tried. Yep. And so she said, I get a call. Okay. He said, yes. He's really? That's awesome. He said, yeah, he'll probably only have like maybe a half hour or so. That's fabulous. That would be really, really cool. So we all got together and everything into one of the meeting rooms, and we sat down and talked to him. And we had the best time just talking to him, hearing stories about this and that and his father and other performers and traveling and the trials and tribulations kind of stuff and everything else. Before we knew it, we looked down. 3 hours had gone by. We had so much fun. And definitely, this is what I want to do.
That is really cool. So you moved from the Tropicana to the Showboat?
I was there. I did all their MC work for all their special events. I've given away millions of dollars working for them. I did all their sweepstakes. You know, we had $100,000 winners, $200,000 winners. I'm giving away all these prizes and everything. I got the chance to work with some really, really amazing people. Hal Myers, Damien, who was just on your podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We got a chance to work together a summer where I was MC and he was doing his magic show. And that just escalated. We're like best of friends now.
So are those the only two casinos that you worked in Atlantic City?
At one time or another, I've worked at all the casinos. My first casino when I first came to Atlantic City was at the old Playboy Casino.
Did you meet Hugh Hefner?
No, I didn't get a chance to meet Hugh Hefner. I would have loved to have done that just to be able to say that I did. But I was doing strolling entertainment for them. For special events.
So what was that like? Did you have to sign a non-disclosure?
Well, actually, I had to get a casino control license.
What is that?
In order to work in a casino, you have to be licensed, which means they have to go and do a whole background check and everything else to make sure that you don't have any connections with the wrong type of people kind of thing. You have to pay for the license and you have to update the license all the time and everything. But you can't work in the casino unless you had the license.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so I did work there for them. I did a lot of special events at Trump Plaza.
Tell me about the special events with the Donald.
Donald Trump and I go back many, many years. Even from his accountant's bar mitzvah in Queens, we performed there. And I performed for Donald and all of the accountant's family. And actually, Donald's kids were there. And we had a great time. It was a lot of fun.
Do you ever get a call from him now?
Oh, no. he probably wouldn't even remember who I am now, which is okay. I don't need that.
So, man, you've done everything. What about the Special Olympics?
Oh, Special Olympics used to be one of my pet charities. Actually, I did a tour of the United States going from institution to institution for the Special Olympics. But I also did a really big event for them where they flew me out to Colorado for the first winter Special Olympics. Actually, I got a plaque from Eunice Kennedy Shriver personally handed to me for thanking me for my help out there. On the plane from New York, I entertained all the Special Olympians on the plane to Colorado the entire trip. It was like 6 hours in the plane.
Yeah, I wonder why they don't do that on long flights. Why don't they hire entertainers for long flights? That sounds like a great idea.
Well, it is a great idea, but a lot of the entertainers don't want to be stuck there for that long.
Oh, that's probably true, huh?
It's true. I mean, I've done other events where we had different business meetings and stuff like that in Atlantic City, and they would take the train from Philadelphia to Atlantic City. Well, I would go and meet them at the train in Philadelphia, and then I would do a little workshop with them on the different types of gambling and different things on the train as the group was coming to Atlantic City.
So, gosh, train entertaining and...
Trains, planes, and automobiles, yes.
All of it. Well, let's talk about your TV and radio career. You met a bunch of stars and worked with a number of them?
I've done a bunch of different little TV things here and there. When I was first starting out, I did a lot of juggling and clowning and kind of stuff. And I was able to actually, on the Mike Douglas show, teach Red Skelton how to balance on a bongo board.
On a what?
On a Rollo Bolo.
Oh, yeah.
So I was able to teach them how to do that. Not only that, but they were having trouble with the set. So I was able to hang out with him for 8 hours.
Oh, how was that?
Oh, it was amazing. We went through a whole thing about like his hobo character and where it came from and his distaste for a lot of the hobo clown characters that are out there now. He said it's too gory. That's not what the hobos would like. If they had a hole in their suit, they wouldn't put like a brightly colored patch onto it. They would try to find the material that would cover it as best as possible so that no one would know that there was a repair made to their suit. I got a chance to meet Buddy Hackett. I was kind of disappointed, though. He had all these beauty queens around him, so he didn't really give me the time of day. But I did get a chance to shake hands with him and tell him I appreciated his work. So
you've met a lot of your heroes.
I was really, really happy. My dad was also in show business to an extent. He used to rent out those giant searchlights that they had out in front of the movies and the premieres of the Broadway shows. And I used to be able to go in afterwards when I was there working with him. I got a chance to sit down and talk to James Cagney.
Oh.
And I got a chance to dance with Olivia Newton-John at Studio 54. I just happened to always try to be in the right place at the right time.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to fact or something John just made up. Does that sound like fun?
That sounds like a plan.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Ah. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you a headline, and you're going to tell me if it's true or not, and then tell me a little bit more about it.
Okay.
Here we go. First headline. Billy rented a float in the Miss America parade to propose to his wife.
Actually, that is true.
It is true.
Trish, my wife, her family is from Atlantic City. That's where we met. She was working at one of the casinos when I was working over at the Tropicana, as a matter of fact. And her family used to religiously every year go and watch the Miss America Parade, which was the biggest parade in Atlantic City. I knew that. So I had already set up with her dad and her family that I wanted to do something, and I wanted to do it during the parade.
What is the Miss America Parade?
The Miss America Parade is a parade of all the contestants from all 50 states, all lined up, and they all have like maybe a themed car that they're in. In Atlantic City, of course, in South Jersey and Philadelphia, it was always aired. It was on TV. But I rented a float because I was working at Showboat at the time when we got married. So I rented a riverboat float. Mm-hmm. In order to have the float entered, I had to be sponsored.
Okay.
So I got one of the local entertainment companies to sponsor the float. Then we sponsored the float, and I had these big banners on either side of the float saying, "Trish, will you marry me?" I had the sound system there playing our song, Michael Bolton kind of thing. As people were going, "Oh, shh, she doesn't know yet. Shh, don't tell her. As I was going all the way down the parade route until finally when we got to where her and her family is, her dad ran out in front of the float to stop the float. Uh-huh. as I went down and I brought Trish up onto the float. And one of the mascots of Tropicana at the time was Diamond Jim. So I had Diamond Jim was on the float as my ring bearer. It was a great big giant diamond costume. And he was my ring bearer. And I proposed to her on the float. Well, what she didn't know or anyone else knew was that I had already called all the TV stations and the newspaper stations and the radio stations and told them that I was going to do this. And so we had all kinds of coverage. Thankfully, she said yes.
Oh, that would be pretty embarrassing if she said no, huh?
All right, cut those cameras out now.
Yeah. So do you have that recorded somewhere?
Yes, somewhere I have a videotape of it, and I have pictures of it, and I actually have a clip of the newspaper story.
Yeah, I'm picturing in my head the announcer saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Texas. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Arkansas. And here's Billy Damon."
Yes, waiting for his wife to say yes.
All right, next headline. Billy flew to San Francisco to protest the city's recent ban on balloons.
No, I didn't fly to San Francisco to do that, but I was involved with a group called PEBA. It's a group of balloon artists that are doing our best to try to stop people from banning balloons because they feel that balloons are causing the deaths of sea turtles and animals.
Right, and they're talking about all balloons now, right?
At first, it was going to and I agree with the balloon releases. That the balloon releases shouldn't be happening anymore. Mostly because the ribbons that, and not the balloons so much, but the ribbons that the balloons are tied to are what actually can cause trouble. There have been cases in California where the Mylar balloons and the metal Mylar foil ribbon actually caused power outages by shorting out the wires, getting caught in the wires. And there are instances where a piece of ribbon or something like that was found inside a sea turtle. It didn't contribute to their death, but it was found inside there. Balloons themselves, they're saying, you know, we have to eliminate it because it's just polluting the earth, but balloons actually biodegradable.
Oh.
It's a natural sustained substance. They degrade or decompose the same rate as an oak leaf.
Now, recently, a city near me, Malibu, near me, is banning all balloons in the city.
Yes. I think that's a little over the top.
You think?
Yeah. I have no idea what I can't imagine everyone at the thing going, okay, we're not going to have that. You know, let's not have any parties anymore either. We don't need that kind of stuff happening over here. You know, people use straws at parties. That's going to kill a bunch of sea life.
Yeah, all I can picture in my head is a bunch of people beginning together going, well, let's see. We have this homeless problem. We have global warming. Right. Let's focus on the straws and the balloons.
Absolutely.
That's a great idea.
There's no understanding what we're going through people's minds.
Yep.
How could they say balloon sculptures or balloon decor, non-helium balloon decor, is going to contribute to animals getting hurt or pollution or anything? You know, 9 times out of 10, the problem isn't the balloon itself or the people that are setting it up, but the customers. The customers don't know that, number one, they shouldn't let these things go away, and that there's a proper way to pin it and bin it.
Mm-hmm.
You pop the balloons, you throw them away, they go into the dump, they get biodegradable, they decompose, we start over again.
All right, let's go on to the next headline. Billy found Mike Tyson sitting on his living room couch.
That actually happened, too.
That happened?
When I first got into Atlantic City, I was renting an apartment. And as time went on, I was like, well, I need to buy a house. So I found this old house. It had 10 bedrooms. It was 3 stories tall. And it was over 100 years old. I was working on rebuilding it. I changed all the windows and did a ton of unbelievable amount of work on this house. While I was doing that, since I had 10 bedrooms, I would be renting out rooms.
Okay.
And I had a couple of the cocktail waitresses that were renting out rooms from me, and also any of the performers that were coming through town that were just coming through and wanted to rent a room, they would rent rooms for me too. Well, one of the cocktail waitresses upstairs I walked down the stairs in the morning to, I think it was early afternoon. I walked downstairs to go into the kitchen, and there sitting on the couch is Mike Tyson. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'm here for Tina. I said, I kind of figured that part out. Can I get you anything? No, I'm fine. We're going to go out. It's okay.
And so I was like, hi, goodbye. And I'm still scratching my head going, that was Mike Tyson sitting on my couch in my living room. What's up with that?
That's bizarre.
I one time had a big birthday party for Trish, my wife. I invited the entire Russian circus to the house.
Oh, what was that like?
That was really cool. Well, at the time, they couldn't come without their escort. Because the curtain hadn't dropped at that point yet, so they were all being watched by the government. So they all had to come in a bus, and they all had to have security with them to make sure that everyone stayed together and that no one left. There was no defecting happening. It was really, really cool. I had all these people over there. They went crazy over cheese. I guess they don't get very much cheese back in Russia. They love the cheese. And then Billy, we come and we leave here, and you book us. Like, excuse me. No, we leave here, right down here. It's like, you can't live in my basement.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen. No, yeah. We leave here, and you book us. We perform for you, and we do shows for you. I said, well, if you're in town and I can book you, then I will. But no, you can't live here. I'm sorry.
Wait, they wanted to live there permanently?
Yeah, they wanted to defect. They wanted to stay in the United States. I'm like, no, I'm not going to be responsible for causing an international incident. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll go on to the next one. One time at a party, a dog chomped on one of Billy's balloons. The dog was choking. Billy grabbed the balloon out of the dog's throat and had to give the dog mouth-to-mouth to revive him.
I have that picture now going through it. No, that never happened.
What a great story if it did happen.
I have to go through it like, what's he doing to that dog? He's giving him mouth to mouth. I can give him CPR, but then I have to make him into something.
Sure, he's giving him mouth to mouth. Sure, he is. All right, next headline. Okay. Billy was in the King Kong movie at the World Trade Center.
That is actually true. Remember what I said about my dad having those big giant searchlights?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they were actually hired. We were hired with those searchlights at the Queensboro Bridge. We were doing a thing where King Kong was supposedly going through the water and up onto the bridge. I had a really great time working on that set. Not only did they give me the army costumes and everything else, we repainted the truck so it looked like an army truck and put the lights on and had the lights going down the Queensboro Bridge. But while I was there, I was getting a chance to meet all the guys from the grip, all the people that are working the set and everything else. And I see that they have this Harley Davidson motorcycle there. I was like, wow. Oh, hey, guys, you think I could take that for a ride? Mm-hmm. I was like, well, no, I don't think you'd be able to take it for a ride, but he's allowed to ride it. Maybe you can go with him. I was like, all right, I'll ask him. And I go, hey, I was wondering with that Harley, I can ride a motorcycle. Okay, if I just take it for a ride down the thing. Well, no, you can't do that. The director's not going to like that. But I can. You can ride with me. It's like, okay. So we jump onto the back of the bike. It was Jeff Bridges.
The star of the show.
And so we go and we're cruising down, you know, the Queensboro Bridge was shut down for the movie. So we're cruising up and down the bridge. And then there's another scene where he's supposed to be taking I don't think the motorcycles made it to the movie, into the film. But there was another thing where he has this bicycle. And it was a brand new Fuji bicycle that the guys got. And the grip guys had to make it look old. So mm-hmm. They had this brand, and there's two of them. You know, because if anything happens to one, they have to have a backup. So they had a brand new Fuji bicycles, brand new. And they're taking pliers and scratching up all the paint and then hitting it with black spray paint so it looks all. I'm like, oh, my God, what are you doing to these bikes? They're beautiful. What are you doing? And then Jeff Bridges gets to go onto the bicycle and the director's saying, all right, now I want you to come down here and I want you to skid the bicycle to a halt as you look up and tell Jessica that you're on your way. He says, okay, I don't know how to do that. And he tried to do it, and he couldn't do it. And I said, Jeff, here, let me show you. And I showed him how to skid the bicycle to a stop. That scene actually made it into the thing. not me doing it, Jeff doing the skit on the bicycle, and I was responsible for that. Yay.
So if I go back and watch the King Kong movie, I'll see him skid on the bike, and I'll be like,
skidding on a bicycle, and that was Billy. Actually, there's another scene where you see the big light, and you see the guy in the army suit, and that's me.
Oh, Billy's the guy in the army suit.
That's it.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
All right, so we're going to move into some fan questions. You want some fan questions? Because you have many, many fans, my friend.
Oh, well, yes, yeah. Let's see what they ask, what they're asking about.
Rob Balchunas, who is a great balloon artist out of SoCal, he's kind of famous for the business card that says, Rob the Balloon Guy.
Yeah, don't really rob me. That's just my name. Yeah,
that's exactly. See, you know it, right?
Oh, yeah, I know Rob very well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he asks, how is the East Coast different up and down the coast?
The difference really is the same difference between one neighborhood and another, as far as entertainment and as far as relationship of entertainment to the events. There are certain neighborhoods that you go to where price is no object. I've done stuff in Connecticut one time where I did a birthday party, and they actually hired the entire Royal Hannaford Circus to come down and give elephant rides and camel rides and do circus shows and stuff like that for this kid's birthday party.
Wow.
I've done other things where, you know, with the parties where the people are like, well, no, we think that balloons and face painting would be too ostentatious for this party.
Like, oh.
Okay. So it's the same thing happens going up and down the East Coast. It actually also relates to what you can charge. Like what you can charge up in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and areas up there is going to be a lot more than what you can charge here in Florida.
Oh, okay.
And that also has a lot to do with the other performers that are here in the area. Right. I mean, like, for example, I don't mean to speak badly of anybody, but
no.
Disney, for example, is still paying their performers the same rate for a 3-hour event that they were charging 12 years ago.
Wow.
Now, they're not charging the client the same rate, of course.
Of course not.
That keeps on going up every year. And so I asked some of the performers, they're like, well, why are you doing this? You're making like $50 an hour. Why would you do that for Disney? It's, well, because if I don't, you know, then they won't hire me anymore. It's like, okay, then it's their loss. It's not yours.
That's right.
If everybody says, no, this is wrong, we need to get, and we tried this in New York, too, it didn't work either. We need to get a decent wage. We need to be treated better. And then everyone says that, then they have no choice but to do that.
Yeah, we have that same thing here at Disneyland in California. The exact same thing. They have the reputation of not paying their entertainers what they're worth.
No, it's true. I mean, when I first came to Florida, I auditioned for Universal. And I went into audition for Universal. It wasn't even a performer's audition. They were looking for singers and stuff like that. But I was like, oh, I'm going to take advantage. I'm going to get in front of them and do what I can. So I brought everything. I brought magic. I brought stilts. I brought juggling. I brought everything down to them. And I started doing my stuff and everything. Stop. Why am I doing something wrong? No. Bring Charlie in. Charlie needs to come in. Oh, and get Bob from the other department to come in. Wait, don't. We're going to start over again. And I get all these other people in, and I start doing my stuff. I start doing my magic, and I start doing this, and I start talking about my stilts and the costumes and everything. I was like, this is awesome. We're going to have him start right away. We can get him to work in the carnival area. We can get him to work over here. Come in tomorrow. We'll go through orientation. We'll get you started. It's like, wow. That was easy. Cool. Yeah. Okay, we could do that. So I go in the next day, and I'm there ready to fill out my paperwork for orientation. I'm filling out the paperwork. I go, hey, guys, this says $7.50 per hour.
Ugh.
Oh, yeah. All of our performers start at that. It's like, no, you don't understand. I'm not all of those other performers. I'm not like a high school kid. I got a family. You can raise your family on $7.50 an hour, and you're only telling me that you can give me 15 hours a week. Oh, yeah, but you won't stay there. You'll move right up. As what, to $13 an hour? You know, some of our performers actually make that. Like, no. This is wrong. Sorry. I'm still scratching my head over that. How he said he could sit there and think that it's okay to offer that. You know, unfortunately, that's what's happening a lot of different places. They're not worried really about the quality of the work. They're just worried about having the person there. So when they're walking through an event with the client and saying, okay, look, well, there's a face painter over there, and there's the magician over there, and yeah, there's a caricature artist over there, and there's a balloon guy. Oh, look, he's even making a balloon. How cool is that? And then, well, that's everything. So see ya. Here you go.
Yeah.
And they're off. And their job is done.
All right, we're going to go to Hal Myers, who is a friend of yours, a.k.a. Damien.
Yes.
He asks, or he says, you are so multifaceted. How did you acquire your skill set? It's one thing to be good at one or two things, but in the entertainment arts, you cover the gamut. How is it possible?
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Hal. I appreciate that. Hal's a great guy, too. Very, very talented as well. Well, the one reason that when I first started, I started as a clown, and then I decided I was going to be a magician.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was getting calls, people going, oh, we want you to do your clown thing. Nope, sorry, I'm a magician. We want you to do some stilt walk. Nope, sorry, I'm a magician. We want you to do some balloons. Nope, sorry, I'm a magician. Finally, it dawned on me, I'm an idiot. I'm turning down all this work.
Yeah.
So from that point on, I said, anytime anyone calls, the answer is yes, I can. And if you do everything long enough, you either get better at it or you stop doing it.
Yeah.
And so, that, you know, I've been performing for over 40 years.
And now you do everything.
And now I do everything. I like to think that I do everything well. Am I the best? Absolutely not. But I hold my own.
All right. Leland Faulkner says, mm-hmm, you are one of the most supportive artists I know. Why do you reach out to other artists the way you do?
That took a really long time to learn. Being a performer, when you first started, of course, you're always looking over your shoulder at every gig that you're doing to try to keep your gig and don't give away too much information. You don't want these people taking your gigs from you.
Yep.
You know what? No, that's not the case. As a performer or as any other type of business, you don't want customers, you want clients. And in order to have a client, you have to build up a relationship with that client. Once you have that relationship with that client's not going to look anywhere else.
Right.
And if I've had other people say, oh, you know, so-and-so called and he wanted to, you know, take over this restaurant, let's say a restaurant, for example. And we told him, no, that, you know, Billy's the only one for us. I said, well, I appreciate that. And the reason why they said that is because the way I treat them and the way that, and my professionalism of working with them. So now, since I don't have to worry about anybody taking anything from me, I'm able to do what I can to help bring everyone else around me up.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that elevates the entire industry, not just one or two people.
I had a philosophy when I first started doing this. I did a library showcase in Los Angeles, in LA. My thought was, what I'm going to do is I'm going to friend all the best entertainers so I can be part of that group. And then I refer them business. They refer me business. Everybody wins. There's definitely enough business in LA to go around.
Mm-hmm.
It's better that everybody supports each other.
Right. And that's the whole idea behind networking is if I go out there and start trying to get work, even doing the hardest work I can to keep these people and get new people and everything else, I'm only going to be able to get a handful of clients.
Okay.
But each of us can go out and get a handful of clients. And now we have a massive quantity of clients.
That's right.
And people have the same thing. Like, oh, I can't believe you work for agents. Why not? They're a bunch of thieves. And they're like, no. As long as you get what you want and what you feel fair. I mean, if I tell them I need $200 for this job and they get $500 for that job, I don't care.
That's right. I'm with you on that.
As long as I get the amount that I'm happy with and I'm comfortable with.
Right.
Why shouldn't they make some money? And if they can make some extra, that's fine. But for me to try to think, well, they're making too much money. Who the hell are you to tell them how much they're making?
Yeah, I always think that too. It's none of my business what they're making as long as I'm making exactly what I want to make.
That's it. And by working for a whole bunch of different agents, you're working for an entirely new group of clients.
Right. And the agent is doing a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. They're getting the client, they're putting together the proposals, they're putting together the contracts, they're doing all that other, and you get the call, all right, I need you to show up here for this long, do that. Okay, thank you. And it's done.
And they have clients that work with them year after year after year after right. year.
That you wouldn't be able to get into.
Right. Tell us one of your horror stories. Do you have a performing horror story for us?
Oh, everybody has a horror story. I have one. I've actually heard several other people have the same problem. Mm-hmm. I was doing a clown show. It was outdoors. I have my squared circle, and I'm pulling things out of the squared circle and playing with the kids as I pull things out. And at the end of the squared circle, I pull out a carnival ribbons, and I pull out the carnival ribbon to produce my dove. And I pull out the carnival ribbon. I'm going around. I'm playing with the kids and everything. And I go to open up the thing, and my dove had passed away in the carnival ribbon. I don't know if it was hot or it was just his time or whatever the case. And I'm there, and for a split second, I'm looking down going, oh, my God, what do I do? And I look up at the audience, and I put my fingers underneath the wings, and I go, whoa, look at him flying around. And I put him underneath the table, and I finished the show.
Oh, my God.
After the show, I broke down going, oh, my God, what have I done? What happened? How did that happen? How can I avoid that happening? Oh, it was devastating.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my nightmares. I do magic with live animals, and mm-hmm. I have a bunch of different animals that I do magic with, and mm-hmm. that is one of my nightmares. It's never happened yet.
Oh, and the audience had no idea that anything happened. I did a really good job of covering it because I actually put my fingers underneath his wings and started flapping his wings around.
Dang. All right, give us a little piece of advice for the beginner.
Learn as much as you can from whoever you can. Mm. When I was first learning, I had a chance to hang out with some really, really, really talented people. And I didn't pursue that or take advantage of it as much as I would have liked to. I met and got a chance to hang out with Vernon. I went to Tony Slidini's house and took a lesson with him.
Di Vernon.
I took a lesson with Tony Slidini at his house once. Got a chance to meet Al Goshman. He showed me a move on with the SpongeBob's, which is cool. Got a chance to meet a whole bunch of people, but I didn't pursue it to build up a relationship with them or to build up a mentorship with them. Mm. And I regret that now. Another friend of mine who I met while doing a show, he came to visit. I had no idea who this kid was. We wound up hanging out, talking magic, to 2 o'clock in the morning. And then a couple of years later, I'm at a convention. I keep on hearing his name and going on. And like, I know this name. Who is this Jeff McBride guy? Why do I know this name?
Oh, this guy.
And it turns out that he actually put the time in to learn from the masters there. I didn't know that they were actually masters. I knew they were, there were names and everything else, but I didn't put them into the master mentor relationship.
Sure.
There's a whole bunch of opportunities that I missed that I could have learned so much more from. So learn as much as you can from whoever you can, and don't stick to just one thing. Maybe you'd be better at something else than you are at this. Learn magic, learn juggling, learn stilt walking, learn whatever possibly comes across the plate so that if the call comes in, look, I'm looking for somebody. No, I know we had you last year. You did your magic show, but I'm looking for somebody to do something different. How about a juggling show? Yeah, that would be great. Who do you have to do that? Me.
All right, is there a piece of advice for the working pro other than the great advice you just gave?
Yes. Always strive to be professional. Be as professional as you can. And sometimes it's little things. When I'm doing my lectures and everything else for the conventions and stuff like that, one of the things I always tell people is like a name badge. It's really, really cheap. It doesn't cost anything. But now you're friends with your audience. They know your name. Now it's not, you know their name. Now you're entertaining. They can call, hey, Billy, come on over here and do it. So you already built up that relationship with them just by having a name tag. Mm. Always look presentable. Even if you're going out to the store, you have no idea who you're going to meet on the way. One time I had a friend of mine in the car and we were going to another show or something like that. We stopped in the McDonald's and I go order to McDonald's. The girl at the window goes, I know you. You're the guy that just did that magic trick in front of the train. You levitated the guy in front of the girl in front of the train. Isn't that you? I said, yes, it is. That was fabulous. And the guy next to me, his jaw dropped because we were just talking about always looking like you're a performer. If I had my dirty T-shirt on and a hat and everything else while I was on my way to an in-between gigs or something like that, I'm not looking like a performer. And she probably wouldn't have recognized me. So you never know around the corner someone's going to recognize you or you're going to meet somebody that you can give a card to or something like that. Always be ready for that.
That's great advice. Perfect. Well, thanks, Billy, for doing my show. Where can someone get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you for performing or for anything?
Oh, well, they can always go to and find me on Facebook at Billy Damon or Damon Entertainment. I have a page on there. Or you can just go to BillyDamon.com, my website, and you can find me there. My phone numbers and email and all that kind of stuff is all right there.
Excellent. And then they can talk to you about lectures and such too.
Right. Well, I have the lectures that I do. I also have a couple of DVDs teaching how to do different recipes on balloons. And on that DVD, I also have a bunch of tips and tricks on how to make more money at restaurants and all kinds of stuff like that.
And how could someone get a hold of one of those DVDs?
Well, you can go to BillyDamon.com, send me an email and go, hey, you know that DVD you were talking about? I'd like to buy one.
Thanks to all my variety artists. If you found this podcast valuable, tell a friend. That's how we can spread the word. Also, make sure to get your free audiobook from audible.com. Just go to thevarietyartist.com/book to get your first book for free. You can reach me at john@thevarietyartist.com or join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask questions of our wonderful guests like my friend Billy.
Yay!
Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist, but until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.